Hello, and welcome to episode 148 of Speak Beastie for April 5th, 2022. I'm Jeff.
And I'm Marjolaine. And yes, this week we are releasing the episode slightly with a slight delay, but we have a very good reason to do so. Yes.
Because there has been so much press coverage surrounding Secrets of Dumbledore, because we are, as of the release of this episode, it has not quite come out to the world yet, but it is this close. So we had to take a little bit of a pause to just kind of take in some of this press coverage, because there is a lot to talk about here.
Yeah, and also to respect an embargo that I was under until today.
Yet that too.
But before talking about that, we want to thank our sponsor for this episode, our Patreon supporter, Beth W. Thank you so much, Beth.
Yay! Thank you, Beth. We really appreciate you.
You are sponsoring a very special episode, so thank you so much. And actually, you directly helped me to be in the position that I am now. We will talk about it later, too. So,
yeah. All right. Well, then many thanks to Beth. Thank you for being a wonderfully supportive person. We appreciate you.
Thank you, Beth.
So shall we dip into the Phoenix Register a little bit before we really get into it?
Oh, yeah, because it's full. The register is, we have folders coming out of the register. It's absolutely crazy.
And now a message from our sponsors.
Hey you, yes you, the magical cats and dolls waving your wands like bean shooters in a caper. Looking to be on the up and up about Newt Scamander, famous zoologist and world traveler? No need for gossip at the juice joint, just tune your ears to Speak Beastie. And now for as little as one dragon dollar a month, you can make Speak Beastie the Neasles Meow. Support the show at patreon.com and suddenly you're the big cheese, the real McCoy, with exclusive access to swell sneak peeks, bloopers, and behind the scenes features. But wait, there's more. Sponsors can also beat their gums at the joint with access to the Speak Beastie Common Room on Facebook. Now you're really on the clean sweep, flyboy. Get a wiggle on to patreon.com/speakbeastie to learn more about becoming a sponsor today. It's the Billy Wigs knees and how.
One of the big news that we will talk about later is that there was some press screening earlier last week. And I maybe saw one of these screening.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, like more and more people every day, I was one of the lucky ones to already have seen the movie. So yes, it's obviously our main discussion. But we also have so many other new material, because Warner Brother is releasing everything now, and in my humble opinion, there is far too many clips. There are far too many clips. So I understand people who are eager to watch everything, but I mean, if you are listening to this episode, I guess you are not, you want to know more before seeing the movie, but for people who want to see the movie without knowing too much, don't watch every clip, please.
That seems to be something that it isn't just this movie. It seems to me that the bigger the movie, the more they will not just do a trailer and a teaser and then a second trailer, which we got all that with this, but then they do all these TV spots as well. And it kind of reminds me of, they made a sequel to an animated movie called The Secret Life of Pets, where they had trailers out already, but then they did like a different cut of the trailer for each individual character in the film. And when you put them all together, it kind of feels like you don't know all the big twists and you don't know how everything is resolved, but otherwise you could almost kind of piece together a storyboard of what's in the whole movie. And thank goodness this thing's coming out soon, because if they release any more clips for Secrets of Dumbledore, then with the exception of a few key plot points, then we'll basically have the whole movie.
Yeah, no, I agree. And they even have some full scenes, and that's the thing that I'm most not sure about, because it's one thing to see a trailer. You can watch a trailer without thinking too much about this little clip spot of image that you see. But if you watch a full scene like they did with the blood trove scene, that's a bit too much for me before seeing the movie. But I don't know, maybe it's just me. Anyway, like we said, we had some press screening, but we also have another more important event. We had the world premiere a few days ago. And so it was in London. It's actually the only premiere with the actors that will, with red carpet and all of it, that will happen for this movie. And the red carpet was streamed live. So I wasn't at the red carpet, but I watched it live, and it was really nice. Everyone looked so stunning. It was really, really cool. It was hosted by Tom Felton. He was so nervous. I don't know if you watched some...
I loved seeing him do that.
Yeah. No, I loved it too, but he was not in his element, clearly.
No, I mean, and some people just naturally take to that kind of thing, and some people don't. It might have also been just a little bit... He has existed... It's funny, he has existed in this Wizarding World universe longer than most of the people who are in this film that's coming out, and yet he has no direct connection to it. He's just become this really lovable, wonderful, iconic person in the universe who's still willing to go back and revisit it.
Yeah, no, it was a really nice choice, because at the same time when he meets David Heyman, that he know for more than 20 years, it's so David Heyman saying to him, I couldn't believe that 20 years ago, I would not believe that you will be hosting red carpet even for another movie of mine. So it was really, I'm really moving. And at the same time, you have somebody like Jessica Williams, who is basically us, so just fangirling with Tom Felton. And yeah, that's, and all the other actors, when he asked the question, like, wow, how do you feel with the, and they say, but you know how I feel, you went through it too. So, so yeah, that was really nice.
And it's fascinating to see those two, because Jessica Williams, we'll get a little bit into this as we discuss some of the things in our main discussion, but she's been a fan of this universe her whole life. She grew up with it, and now she's stepping into it. But Tom Felton was kind of in on it from the beginning, and he grew up with it as well, but he grew up with it from a completely different perspective than her.
Totally, yeah. So, no, yeah, it's really nice to see. It reminds us that, like they say, they during the red carpet, during every event, they say that, like, that it's a family. All the cast, all the crew around this franchise, the Fantastic Beasts and the Harry Potter movies, they all feel like a family, and they include the fans in this family. And it really, in an event like this red carpet, you really feel that. You really feel like we are part of this community, and that's so nice to feel that.
It's important to the fans to feel connected to the thing that they love so much, and it's nice to see the actors embracing that.
Totally, yeah. So speaking of fan events, you will have more and more fan events in the US coming up in the following days, even the day that we are recording. So so yeah, there you will have, even if your the release in the US is one of the latest in the world, you still have a lot of fan events early this week when this episode will come out. So that's exciting. And in France too, they have a lot of early screening too. So many fans will see this movie early. And that's cool. But I would prefer a nice world released where everyone can gather and watch it the same day and talk about it the same day, because it's so weird to have to wait. And obviously I'm one of the luckiest that I was one of the first to see it, but I would totally trade that with the chance to be able to watch it all together at the same time.
So now we will have to just start calling you the chosen one, because you've seen it before the rest of us.
I was thinking of myself as the keeper, the secret keeper, because it really felt like that, signing all these Warner Brothers embargo papers and everything. That's
oh, that's true.
Yeah,
you're the secret keeper. That's fun.
Another news, we learned that the script will be published only on July 19th. And probably it was what was planned when the movie was supposed to come out in July. And we got the cover, and sadly, no Minalima design for this one. So it will feel so weird on my shelf having this third one not matching the first two.
It's going to feel a little bit odd, yeah.
No, it's really sad.
For me, at least, it's going to feel about the same, only because it never occurred to me for some reason to collect the screenplays from the first two movies until they had been out for a while. Because I'll admit, I do have a decent collection of Wizarding World stuff on my shelf, apart from the canon books, but I don't have every single thing that's come out. So mm-hmm. I did get the scripts eventually, but the movies had been out for a while when I finally got them. So for me, the timeline is going to feel about the same between when I see the movie several times and when I have the script for the movie. But for a lot of people, yeah, it's going to feel odd because they were probably expecting to get the script. But I do relate to it not looking the same, because when you've got two books in a set with similar covers designed by the same folks, and then you've got the third one that looks different, it's sort of like when you have the original copies with the original cover art for movies, or for books that were turned into movies, and then they start releasing the books with the covers from, like, the movie posters.
Mm-hmm.
And you put them next to each other on the shelf, and you think, okay, I've got the books, they're in order, and yet they don't feel like a set.
Yeah, and they did such a great job with the first two. I mean, I bought the script the day of the release every time, because for us it was also very useful to have the script to analyze without before the movie being available between the theater release and the DVD, Blu-ray, everything released. So it was really handy for us to have the script to analyze everything for the podcast. But at the same time, I was just happy to have this beautiful object. And this one is not as beautiful. It's the cover with the phoenix flying to Hogwarts. It's not bad, but it's nothing like the Minalima design. And actually, I had friends from La Gazette who were at Minalima's House of Minalima's for the new exhibition around Secrets of Dumbledore designs, and they asked them about the why they don't do the cover for this book, and they answered that it was the publisher choice. They didn't have a word in this matter. So yeah, I'm sure they would be happy to do that, but yeah, it was the publisher decision. So
that's a shame, because the Minalima art just across the board has become a really important iconic part of the fandom for people who are really, really deep into it. Like, you can always spot, I think, people who are huge Wizarding World nerds, because you say Minalima and instantly they're like, oh, I know what that is.
Yeah, yeah. And actually the the poster for the new exhibition in House Amunelima around Secrets of Dumbledore, it could have been the cover of the book. It's beautiful. It's what they did for Bhutan. And we could have this style for the cover of the book. So it's even more upsetting that we don't have that. Anyway, we need to move on because we have so
much
to talk about.
I think before we get into our main discussion, I just looked out my window and I think I see an owl coming.
Oh, yeah.
Which is fortunate. Yeah, it's good that he got here because there's a storm coming in my end.
Oh, good.
All right, so our owl post for today comes from Jerry, and it's in response to the Aberforth's mustache episode. I just love reading that. So
I'm stopping you because I'm looking at my window and actually it's snowing here. How weird is it?
Oh my gosh. Okay.
What?
Oh.
Okay, sorry.
It's okay. So our owl post comes from Jerry, and Jerry says, I just listened to the Aberforth's mustache episode. When I heard you discuss the train, have you seen the 5 pages from the Secrets of Dumbledore movie magic book that are visible in the Amazon US site? One gives us quite a bit of detail about the Great Wizarding Express, one focuses on Queenie, one on Lolly Hicks, and one on Albus. One just the story so far, which we should all know. It's sad that the script won't be out until July, so I hear, but these pages from the movie Magic have been visible on Amazon for weeks, so I assume that the studio won't pull them back now.
Oh, no, the movie Magic we have the release date, I think. It will be in April, I'm sure of that.
For the movie Magic book?
Yeah, for the movie Magic from the book that he's talking about with the pages that was released. And I saw that, and actually I didn't share that too much because I thought that some of it are pretty spoilery, especially the one on Queenie. The Great Wizarding Express is really, really cool. You have some background information that are not really important plot-wise, I think. Lally Hicks give quite a lot about the background of the character. It's really interesting. I don't know if you can consider that spoiler because it's more background information about the character, is not connected to the plot of the movie. But I really, it was really interesting. And Albus, it was more general. You don't have specific thing about the plot, so it's fine. But the Queenie part is pretty spoilery, in my opinion.
I actually didn't look at these pages. I knew that they were out there, and it's not that I avoided them. I just didn't actually take the time to go on and look at them. Like, I plan to have the movie Magic book.
We got so much news, so much
content. Yeah, it gets kind of hard to know exactly, okay, which thing do I look at first? Which thing do I read first? Do I look at any of it? Do I avoid it? And then even if you do decide on some of it, eventually you lose track of what you've seen and what you haven't.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
But as to your point about whether it's spoilery or not, since you did specify with the stuff about Lolly Hicks that it doesn't have any direct bearing on the plot of the movie, I think that is what makes the difference. If it doesn't have any bearing on the plot, then no. What I always say is if I could read it in the synopsis of the movie, like if they would put it on the description of the movie on the back of the film case, or if I look up a description of the movie on IMDb, would that be a spoiler? No. Although there are movie descriptions on IMDb that it's not just a teaser for what the movie is going to be, it's like a summary of the entire film, but usually those don't appear until after the movie's already come out, and a lot of times they do mark them spoilers.
No, it's hard to navigate between the all this stuff. Even when it's officially released, you're like, is it spoiling the movie or not? So, yeah. But speaking of spoiler, I think it's the time for our main discussion. And don't worry, I will not spoil the movie. I will do my best talk about the big plot point. For the spoiler part, you will have to go to Patreon if you don't want to wait the next episode to have a spoiler review. You will have
very
one
true
in Patreon.
Right. Right before this episode came out, Lizzie and I had a conversation, and it's funny because I forgot how long ago it had been since we actually had it. We did spoiler discussions in two parts. One was based on some points that were pretty much just rumors at the time. That was discussed and released some time ago. But more recently, we released a spoiler discussion based on a conversation that Lizzie had with an anonymous source that had seen a test screening of the movie. So that one had stuff in it that we talked about that definitely for sure happens in the movie. So if you would like to hear that, you can check out our Patreon.
Yeah, and you will have also, I guess today or tomorrow, I don't remember, but you will have also our full spoiler review with Anne, because she also had access to an early screening. So yeah, we will cover that too. So, but no, today this review is just to get you excited and to give you my first reaction. And yeah, it's I'm trying to stay really, really vague about and not talk about the plot, just about feelings, I guess.
I will admit, I have been looking forward to hearing you attempting to stay vague while also expressing how you really feel about what's happening.
Yeah, that's an interesting exercise. But yeah, first I just want to give a bit of context, because I saw, like I said, a press screening very early. It was 1 week before the world premiere, and I wasn't expecting to see that before. I learned that I had the opportunity to see that only less than 48 hours before the screening, so I had to flew to London and to be there to this screening. And it's just the experience of learning you have this opportunity, flying, organizing a flight and a stay in London in just 1 day. That was insane. And I just wanted to give this context, because I remember when I first was listening to Crimes of to Speak VC and to this episode where we got this first spoiler-free review of the first movie from the host that had the chance to see the movie early too. It was a fan event, I don't remember. But and never at this time in 2016 I would imagine that one day I would be at their place, being the one having this opportunity to see the movie so early. So yeah, that was quite crazy. And it was I was the only fan in the room with maybe 10 journalists. So it was really a weird experience. It could be quite lonely, but at the same time, I was just thinking of all our community of the podcast, and I was not alone in my head. But the weirdest thing was to go out of the screening and not being able to talk about it with anyone, and to not be able to go online and have other people sharing their thoughts. I was totally alone with that, and that was the hardest part. So I'm glad I'm allowed now to talk about my feelings. And my first feelings is, this movie is good! Yay!
Oh, thank goodness. Okay, that's it. We can go home now. Marjolin says the movie's good. We know what we need to know.
Yeah, no, that's a relief. Definitely. I was so stressed. We were waiting for 3.5 years. So waiting so long for a bad movie, that would be so, so hard. But no, don't worry. It's good. And first, I want to talk about the new cast, because that was the part that I was the most excited about, and they are absolutely amazing. I want to start with Mads Mikkelsen, because of course it's one of my favorite actors, so I knew I will not be disappointed, but wow, his Grindelwald is absolutely perfection. I absolutely love loved him in every single scene. He's dangerous, he's charming, he's absolutely terrifying and monstrous at some part, but you have absolutely no choice to be fascinated by him, by his characters, and he's absolutely amazing. And his chemistry with Jude Law is wow. I was expecting something like that, but not, yeah, it's a lot.
So it was hot.
Yeah, it's hot. It's definitely
it's hot. I see here that you wrote that their chemistry was hot, and yeah. I am absolutely thrilled to hear that I was completely right, that Mads Mikkelsen is the guy that we probably should have just had him from the beginning.
Absolutely, yeah.
I remember when we were doing the Google Hangout, when we streamed that on YouTube, where we were speculating, they had just announced Johnny Depp was out, and we were thinking, who is going to step in and take over the role now? And someone said Mads Mikkelsen, and the rumors were flying around, and I remember thinking, why wasn't he, like, the first choice? And specifically, yeah. It's one of those things where everybody must surely be thinking, why didn't I think of that? Because that's how I was seeing it. As soon as they said Mads Mikkelsen, I look him up and I see everything that he's done. And I thought about everything I'd seen him in without even realizing what his name was, because I just wasn't paying that close attention at first. But then I thought, okay, this guy is perfect. Like, he should have just, I mean, I guess better late than never, right?
No, absolutely, yeah. And for this movie, it was the perfect timing, I guess, to have him, because he has a lot to do, and he interacts with a lot of characters, and I love that, and I can't wait to have deep conversation about Grindelwald's Dumbledore's relationship, because I have votes, so I can't wait to talk about it. But it was one of my favorite parts of the movies, was Mads Mikkelsen, so yeah. Love it. But the other one that we were waiting for, even if we had a tidbit in a slight preview in the last one, it was Lally Hicks, Jessica Williams as Lally Hicks. And I love her. I really love her. She's just such a bad witch, and she knows it. And I love her confidence. Jessica Williams is just pure light, and she brings an energy that is so unique that we didn't got with other characters. And the way she entered the movie is really, really cool, and she has great lines, and I love her magic. She has a very specific type of magic that is so cool, and she has a lot of action scenes, and she's just great. I love him. I love her. She's great. A great addition to the squad, definitely.
I'm fully prepared. If we don't get a t-shirt that says, you know I'm a witch, right? If we don't get that t-shirt as like an official t-shirt, I will have one made.
Yeah, absolutely. And Jessica Williams, you can feel how happy she is to be there. And yeah, that's lovely to see. And She's great. She's just great. The other one that I was really, really happy to see is Aberforth and Richard Cole. He's doing an amazing job. And I want to steal Anne's husband for myself, because clearly she has too many husbands and she doesn't need one more. So, yeah.
As much as I find Richard Coyle absolutely alluring, and I do, you two can fight over him, because all of my husbands are anime characters and I can't have them anyhow. So you two can fight over him.
Okay, cool. One less competitive. There is absolutely no doubt that he will be a fan favorite. He's just iconic in everything that he is in. And actually, I was really happy that we have more of him than I expected. I was expecting only one scene, but we won't giving away too much, we have more than one scene. So, yeah.
That seems to be a theme with a lot of these characters. You think we're just going to get, like, the one scene, maybe two. Because with some characters, like, with the last film, we had, not to jump too far ahead, but with the last film, we had just the one, like, moment with Bunty that we remember.
Mm-hmm.
And then with this movie, even with all of the teasers and the trailers that have come out, they've made it very, very clear that Bunty is going to actually get to do some important stuff this time.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Bunty was a really, really nice surprise. We got quite early tidbits from Victoria Yates that she would have more to do in this movie, and she definitely has. And I like the development of this character. She has an important part in the plot, and she's great. She's not just the admirer of Newt anymore. She's still absolutely obsessed with Newt, and you see that, but it doesn't stop her from being herself and from being being useful for everyone and for the plot. So I love Bunty in this movie. I really, really love her. And Victoria Yates is just adorable. So,
she's a wonderfully charming actress.
Absolutely, yeah. She's so relatable. She's bringing, I don't know, something really, really sweet in this movie. And again, in a very different way than Jessica Williams, but it's really, I don't know, these characters are so complementary. You have different characters and different, I don't know, they are all very different. And actually, it's something that I really loved in this movie. It brings back the even more than the first one, but it's more close to from the first one in this impression of a group, of a collective, of it's less around the individuals and more about the collective around Newt, but also around Grindelwald, I guess. But yeah, more it's a real squad again, even if we are missing some part of the original squad. But it's I love this collective feeling, and it's thanks to the other old cast, like I said, they are still really perfect. And Jude Law, he has so much to do in this movie. We knew that Dumbledore will be very present in this movie, and he is. But it's lovely to see. He's definitely the best Dumbledore we got on screen. I'm saying that he's far better than what we got in the Potter movies.
Fair, and it's difficult because Dumbledore was one of the characters in the movies that I feel like was the hardest to adapt, because
absolutely, yeah,
it's so tricky to know where to balance. And Jude Law, in the press event, when we get to talking about that, Jude Law kind of addresses how he kind of married his interpretation of Dumbledore with the Richard Harris version and the Michael Gambon version, because their two interpretations of that character were very, very different. But I feel like Dumbledore is almost impossible to get exactly right in terms of the character you get in the books trying to do a real-life version of that, because characters like Dumbledore, who are over 100 years old, and yet the way they move, the way they present themselves, the way that they act, they have this energy that makes it seem like underneath the 100-something-year-old beard and robe is a much, much younger man. I feel like in real life, people like that don't exist, but with Jude Law's version of Dumbledore, he has, I think, a little bit more room to move around in that space.
Yeah, and then at the same time, yeah, the plot is not around him, but he has a lot to do. And the way that Jude Law is talking about his character in the press things, the press conference and all the interviews that we got, is so smart and so true. It's all the layers that he's working on to build the Dumbledore of the Potter movies. But we are dissecting every layer, so we have everything in this movie. We have the smart, cheeky sense of humor. He's really, really funny. And at the same time, he has great speeches, and he knows exactly what to to say to people, to bring the best of them. And that's what I love in this movie, is that Jude Law is interacting with everyone, not just Newt. He has great interaction with other characters, and in every interaction we feel that he's really bringing the best out of the others, and he see the best in the others, and that's really fascinating to see. And this beard, and he's still growing. We see the beard evolution with the red carpet, and he can't shave now. He has to Mm-mm. keep the beard.
No, honey, keep the beard. Like, get yourself a beard team. Like, every couple minutes, somebody's checking in on him, making sure his beard is coiffed. That is a beard that is so glorious. Like, it has to be insured for a certain amount of money in case anything happens to it.
Yeah, absolutely.
It has become a part of him now.
Yeah. But yeah, no, Jude Law was great. And of course, I need to talk about Newt. And I love what they did with Newt with this movie. Again, I think it's a good mix between the Newt of the first and the second movie. He's still so socially awkward. He has some scene so cute and so very Newt, the Newt that we know. So that's awesome to see. But at the same time, he tries to be a leader. Like, they talk a lot about that in the interviews. But that's really interesting to see. But the best part with Newt is the duo with Fitzius, with his brother, and the Scamander's brothers. They're just the best team. They are so dynamic. The dynamic between them is hilarious, and we have less of Newt and Jacob and more Newt and Fitzius, and that's a good change, and that's an interesting development, because we know from a first view of this dynamic in Crimes of Grindelwald, but in this one they are always together almost, and that's really, really nice to see. And Fitzius is hilarious, actually. I don't know if it's the comic relief of this movie, but he definitely has a lot of dry, sarcastic humor that is, that's my favorite type of humor, so I love Fitzius.
Oh yeah, definitely. It's one of the we could go all day about Callum Turner and how charming and handsome he is, and how much fun we have with the character of Theseus. But I feel like in with the actor Callum Turner and the character Theseus Scamander, I feel like part of the reason they're so well matched and it's such great casting is because they're both the kind of person who doesn't know that they're funny. Like, they think they're just talking, but there's something so wonderfully humorous in the things that they're doing and they're saying. And even if they're trying to make a joke and the joke is really funny, they're like, why is everybody laughing so hard?
Yeah. No, totally.
Whereas you have Dan Fogler, not Stevens. I'll explain why I'm making that distinction in a little bit. But with Dan Fogler, I mean, you look at the guy just screams punchline. He is here to make sure that you get at least a few good laughs in every moment with him.
Yeah, and you definitely have, again, in this movie. But what I like with Jacob in this movie is that he's definitely not just that. He always was also the emotion part of the first two movies. We have the most emotional scene are with Jacob in the first one, I think, in the end, and the second one with Queenie leaving. But in this one, he brings a lot of emotions, and Jacob is still so, I don't know, so he's a really good character, and Dan Fogler is doing an awesome job again, bringing a lot of laugh, but also a lot of fun, but a lot of emotions too. So I love this for Jacob.
He's got a lot of range, Dan Fogler does, because that's important for a character like Jacob, because when you see him at the end of Crimes of Grindelwald, I remember there's that moment where everything's exploding around him and he's just wandering around looking lost. And I think in a way that might have broken my heart more than anything in that movie, because he's one of those guys that if he is upset and he looks lost, then you know something truly awful has happened. Because yeah, he's usually the one that makes everybody feel better. And it would take an actor like Dan Fogler to really bring that across, because he's usually the humorous guy, but he can flex a dramatic muscle really well when he wants to.
Yeah, and again, in this movie, they also focus on his courage. And he's an... I think Dan said that a while ago, but he's also an action hero in this movie. He has a lot of action to do. And that's really nice, because he's surrounded by... so great wizard, and mostly Lally Hicks. Lally Hicks is, we have a lot of Lally and Jacob together, but we gather that from the trailers. But so he's with this witch, which is absolutely incredible, and he still try to do his best, and that's great. And he's so emotional in this movie, and he has a lot of emotional reaction, and I don't want to say more, but he has great scenes.
You can tell that for Jacob, at least, a lot of this movie is going to be getting his groove back, because he starts off, they make it clear with the footage we've seen so far, he starts off very sad, he was in a bad place, and they start to show you a lot more of the fun, quirky, funny Jacob that you got to know in the first movie. So obviously he's going to go on this journey, and it's going to be very, very good for him, because he's going to start to get back to himself. And I feel like the audience is going to, as he starts to feel better, the audience that loves him is going to slowly start to feel better too.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't want to say too much, but yeah, the first scene with Jacob is absolutely devastating. Absolutely, yeah. But yeah, that's a great character arc for him in this movie. But when we talk about Jacob, we need to talk about Queenie. But I will not talk about Queenie, because I think it's better to discover Queenie's arc in the movie. But I will just say that I'm pretty much satisfied with the development of the character and what they did, and it. Actually, even just after seeing the movie, I think it was listening to Alison Tudor's interview, I don't remember where, but I just realized something from the last movie, from Crimes of Grindelwald, that makes so much sense of why she joined Grindelwald. And in this one, you find her on Grindelwald's side, and you learn how it's like for her to be on Grindelwald's side, and she has a real arc, a real development that I'm really satisfied about, because that's what was maybe missing in the last movie. It was not fully developed, the what she was feeling, and in this one it's very much developed, so I'm satisfied with that. Definitely.
I will say that you being satisfied with the development of her character is reassuring to me, because I have just been seeking reassurance that things are going to work out okay when it comes to Queenie.
Yeah, I won't say more, but... And the other character that I don't want to talk about a lot is Credence. We already know he's a very sad boy. He's still a very sad boy. And yeah, he's still a heartbreaking character to see, because he's in so much pain. But he has an interesting arc, at least, and an interesting development. But I won't talk too much about it. But I would just say that I was expecting Credence to be more in the center of the plot, and he's not. He was he's more, but he still has a very, very, very important part. But I can't wait to talk about more of that in the spoiler discussion. But
it's a character who would be very much at home in Les Miserables, because he's just so sad. His existence is to be a sad boy.
Absolutely. He's not in very good shape in this movie. Let's just say that.
It's a shame never because was. He looks, he finally has a great look. His hair is done. His suit is fit. He's doing badass, like, combat moves because he's learned how and he's not just improvising it now.
Mm-hmm.
And yet he's still sad.
Yeah, very sad.
My poor sad child.
Yeah.
Who is probably a grown man. It is still so hard to be sure of how old Ezra Miller is and how old his characters mm-hmm. are supposed to be.
Yeah, I agree.
It is so hard to be mm-hmm. sure of things like that.
Speaking of that, I think we don't have a date for this movie. We don't know in which year it takes place. I missed that and I will see that in the review.
Interesting, because don't we get years for the other ones? I know for sure at the beginning of the first Fantastic Beasts, they say where we are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So in this, they don't give you, like, even in, like, brief glances at newsprint, like, they don't let you know when it is?
No, but now that I'm thinking about it, I think they say how many years passed since the last movie, so we can gather that. But I can't say because I don't want to. But yeah,
well, when I see the movie, I'm going to be looking for that.
Yeah. But no obvious date on the beginning of the movie, I think. I don't remember, mm-hmm. at least. Another character that I need to mention is, of course, Tina. And it's not a spoiler. She is almost absent from the movie. Mostly because scheduling problem for Catherine Waterston. And I think I read some source mention that it was mostly COVID that kept her far from set. So... But I'm saying that because we can feel in the way that they handle her absence that it was absolutely not a choice. And Tina is absolutely not forgotten. I can say that. It's weird. Even with being absent, she's very present.
Mm-hmm.
And they totally address the fact that we miss her, rightfully so. And the way that they handled that, I think it was quite beautiful. I was really moved by the way they treat Tina and her absence and the few scenes that she is in. So we miss Tina, but they miss Tina too, and that's just for this movie. I hope so.
Well, sure. I mean, Tina, and again, talk about a relationship between two characters. I feel like a character like Tina and an actress like Catherine, their absence is going to be so keenly felt, you can't not acknowledge it because you're going to feel it even if nobody says anything about it. Mm-hmm. And in a way, it's a relief to know that there were acceptable explanations for her not being here, because I don't remember seeing a ton of this, but for some people I think there might have been some worry that her absence in the posters and the trailers, her not doing press events for the movie, meant that she was just not interested in doing this anymore.
No, I don't think she was at the red carpet. That was a good surprise, and I definitely think it was more the context of this period for her and for everyone that kept her away. But we will talk about it more when we talk about spoiler. But I like how it developed Newt's character, but also Tina's character, by the way that they are apart. And I think it's a beautiful way to treat a couple to acknowledge the fact that they are people away from each other. So that's a very interesting way to handle that. And in comparison with other relationship in the movie, it's a good compliment, even if I would totally prefer Tina to be involved in the action. But I liked the way that they treated her absence. So, we talk a lot about humans, but we need to talk about beasts.
There are some pretty big, literally and figuratively, there are some big beasts in this movie. We know that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And that's another thing that I loved in this movie is that beasts are definitely everywhere. And they are at the center of the plot. The main plot is around a beast. And they are omnipresent in all of the... I don't know, not maybe on the subplot, but in most of it, they are there in big and small ways. Sometimes it's just, they are just there because they are there. They don't need to have a purpose to be there, but they are just in every corner. And but at the same time, we have new beasts, very impressive, very cute, very magical, I guess. So... I loved the beast stuff. It's definitely more developed than in Crimes on Grindelwald. So they definitely heard the criticism from fans that said that it needs to be, it's Fantastic Beasts, we need more beasts. And we definitely have more beasts in this movie.
And I feel like that would just track, because if you think about it, if you go out and about on an average day, you're going to see animals, you're going to see pictures of animals, you're going to see people with their pets, you're going to see on TV and on the internet, there's videos and pictures of animals. I mean, animals are an ever-present thing in the world in general. So in the wizarding world, it would make sense that magical creatures would be a thing that you would see, even if they aren't doing anything, even if they're just there. It makes sense.
Yeah, and I like that it's at the same time this big mythological background, this very important piece culturally that are in the center of everything. And at the same time, you have this just this little beast that are used to have light in a cavern, or I don't know, it's just I really liked the way they treated beasts in this movie. And I can't wait to all the newt cases that are waiting for us.
Oh, yeah. The newt cases after this movie are going to be superb, I don't doubt.
Yeah. And another thing that I really was impressed was not just the beast, but just the magic. It's the most impressive and creative magic that we ever got in the Wizarding World, definitely. It's at some point, maybe it was a bit confusing because it's so different from what we had. It's not just simple spell with a wand. It's more grandiose and more mystical magic. And I know that I love that. I was expecting that they go this way. And I'm really, really happy that they went there to do really impressive magic. And the thing that I noticed is we finally, for the first time, I really felt that exceptionally good adult wizard and witches can develop a style in their magic. And you feel that different characters have a different style. I was mentioning Lally Hicks, and she has a specific style. And of course, she is exceptionally good. She is a charm professor, and she is internationally renowned for her magic. But you also have Dumbledore, who really has this, this way of doing magic that is really unique. And I really, really love this, the fact that it's expanding the universe in terms of what magic can look like, and I love that.
I never really thought about that before. You think about, like, when you learn how to do spells at Hogwarts, it's like, okay, this is a stunning spell. The beam of light that goes out from your wand is this color. It's going to be about this big, about this long. It's going to travel about this fast. Those are the boring, like, physics of magic things that you don't really think about very much. But what you kind of, I think, naturally assume is that once you learn how to cast the same spell someone else does, it's going to look more or less the same when each of you cast it. Mm-hmm. But much like with, like, if two different people study the same martial art, and they're doing the same technique, they're gonna eventually, if they progress to the point where they're mastering it, it's going to look unique to each of them that's doing it. And a lot of the magic that's being used in these films, especially I would think this one, because of where the movie has gone to now, it's combative and defensive magic. So it's the kind of magic where the more you use it and the more it stays with you, the more unique it's going to get, because you're not just using the same spells other people are. It's the way you're using them, how often you're using them, how big they have to be to accomplish their goal. So I never really thought about how it would look unique to the person using it, but you make a really good point about the style of their magic.
Yeah, and it's good to just in terms of combat magic and duel, to not have just this ray of light shooting from their wands, because that's kind of boring.
Well, think about Sorcerer's Stone. I mean, that movie that was made over 20 years ago, since mm-hmm. it's came out. When they were making that movie, the technology hadn't caught up yet. The director's interpretation of what actually needs to be shown in the movie, like, it doesn't have to all be, you know, wands and spells. It was like flashes of light, or you use the wand, and if there is no flash of light, no spark or anything, it's just like you use a summoning charm. You go, mm-hmm. Asio, whatever, and then the thing is moving towards you, and that's it. There might be a whooshing sound, but it's visually,
it's
there isn't going to be that.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. there's not going to be that much to it.
Yeah.
But with the magic that's being used here, it's obviously, it's the kind of magic where something is going to come out of your wand and you're going to see the magic itself, like a physical, tangible thing, almost like if you could freeze time, you could reach out and touch it.
Yeah. So at the same time, I guess that some people will think it's too over the top because it's really impressive and really CGI and big effects. So I guess some people will not love it, but I think it was really, really nice to see. Maybe it could be more polished, I guess, but again, it's just a step, and I think it's a good step to expand what magic can look like, to have this space to do even more and more to go further and further in what you can do with magic. So that's mm-hmm. cool. But I just want to say that this movie is not perfect, even if I talk about all the good stuff. Some choices was quite frustrating. And I mean, as a fan that was waiting for this movie for so long and speculating about everything, we always want more. So there is something that I'm missing in this movie, and some part that I thought, oh, they could develop that more, they could treat that otherwise, they could change this dialogue with another way to talk about that. But I think it's a good complaint to have. It's just because we are fan and we are so, we care so much about this story. So, but and I want to save my complaint for spoiler discussion, because it would not mean anything to say, oh, I would prefer them to go deeper into this aspect or deeper into the maybe just the one thing that I talked a lot about before the movie and that I'm a bit disappointing about is the political part of the movie. It's supposed to be an election in the center of this movie, and we don't learn enough about the political background of candidates and about this election background of the plot. So that's my big complaint, I guess.
Don't learn what makes them qualified to be candidates. We just have to accept that it's enough that they're candidates.
Yeah, and we don't have debates, political debates, and I was missing that. Maybe because
wanted that. Some people would have thought, some people might, I think we talked about that when we were talking about the episode where we talked about the International Confederation of Wizards, how some people might mm-hmm. consider it just magical C-SPAN, but honestly, I wanted that. I wanted to see campaign speeches. I wanted to see debates. I wanted to see, like, obviously political advertisements would have been very different back then because they didn't have YouTube ads or anything like that. But I wanted to see just people, if we're going to put this election for this important job at the center of it, I want to see people like making their case for why they should have the job. I do
Absolutely.
Think that,
yeah,
I think that should have at least been something that got talked about a little more.
Yeah. No, that's my big frustration, because I think it was the movie to do that. But what we got is still really, really cool. We have a more clear plot than the Crimes of Grindelwald. So I think even if I'm frustrated with some part, I'm pretty sure that this movie will be more widely appreciated by the general public, because it's more accessible, it's less confusing. Even there is some things that I need to rewatch, because I'm not sure about some plot point, but overall it's more clear, it's more, I guess, the different plots are more better put together, I guess, than in the last one. So, and it's visually impressive. I love the rhythm. It's really good. It's really entertaining. It's a good, even I think for people who are not as involved as we are in the world, it would be an enjoyable movie to watch, because they will go. It has an Indiana Jones feeling also. So that's this type of movie. So. And of course, it has excellent characters. Like I talked a lot about that, but that's the big asset of the movie, I guess. Well, yeah, I'm happy with it, and I'm really excited that we will have many years to analyze it, because there is a lot of analyze.
Oh yeah, we will have no shortage, especially once this thing comes out in a few weeks and everybody has seen it and we can talk about it more openly. I'm sure there will be no shortage of material.
But I'm glad that we will have less of explanation to understand what's happening. So we
True.
Will not need that, so that's good. I hope so, at least. But
well, I'm glad it sounds like you got what you needed from the movie.
Yeah.
And I expect I will feel the same way when it's done.
I'm sure. Yeah. And again, the most important part is that I can't wait to watch it again and again and again, so that's a good sign too.
I've heard other people, little snippets I've caught from people who have seen the movie in some capacity or another, saying the same thing, is that they wouldn't mind going to see this movie more than once. And not only that, but actually buying a ticket, like it's something that they would pay to see multiple times. Hearing things mm-hmm. like that is very, very encouraging.
Yeah, because it's also a movie that is definitely made for the big screen. And that's really important too, to have this big spectacle that is supposed to be enjoyed in the big screen. That's important also, because like that's not a wind battle to think that we will have this movie and all of the rest on the big screen, but it definitely is made for a big screen, and that's really nice to have this opportunity to watch it and rewatch it on the theater. So yeah.
Excellent. Shall we talk about this press conference that happened recently?
Yeah, finally, we have interviews. Yay!
We do. A great, big, giant interview with most of the cast.
Mm-hmm.
Now, before we get into it, I do have to ask you something.
Yeah, sure.
The actor who plays Yusuf Kama, could you please tell me how to pronounce this name correctly so I don't mess it up?
It's William Nadilem.
So it's as simple as it looks. I feel like every time I see his name, I'm going to say it wrong. It's like William Nadilem?
Yes.
Okay, thank goodness.
And
sorry.
I didn't talk about him and about Kama, but that's on purpose. I don't want to spoil too much.
I kind of got that sense. Like anybody that doesn't get specifics brought up is somebody that you can't talk about without talking about things that are very spoilery. So we'll just focus on the press conference now.
Yes.
So recently, we are recording this on March 31st, so it's been 3 days now, but there was a press conference on March 28th. If you'd like to see it for yourself, it is now streaming on YouTube, but it was almost the entire cast and some of the people from production being interviewed about the film. Eddie was there, Jude Law, Dan Fogler, Jessica Williams, Mads Mikkelsen, Allison, William Nadilem, Victoria Yates, David Yates, David Heyman, and Tim Lewis. So quite a lot of people. The director, two producers.
Yeah, I'm surprised that Tim Lewis is in the front line. He was also on the red carpet answering interviews. So I think it's the first time that we got him such present in the press communication, I guess.
Did he write the script?
No.
No, he didn't. Why did I think he did? No, it was...
Usually it's only Devin Heyman that we have, but it's good to have another face from the team.
No, true. You just get the two Davids a lot. They're quite a team. But Tim Lewis was there also, noticeably absent from this press conference. Obviously, Catherine Waterston has not been doing a lot of these press events for the movie for reasons. But the other three that you might have expected to see there that were not there, Ezra Miller was not there. Richard Coyle, who plays Aberforth, he was not there. And Anne, I'm sure, is devastated. Callum Turner was not there. He was probably off auditioning for Captain America, though.
Probably. Did you see his blonde hair from the red carpet?
I did see that. I wonder what that's about.
Definitely for Captain America.
Oh, yeah, for sure. But since you have all of these people from the cast doing one interview, there's advantages and disadvantages, I think, to doing it that way. Because the whole interview, it was actually shorter than I thought it would be. It's about 48 minutes long. And the advantage to having everybody there is they start off, everybody gets at least one question. So everybody gets to talk. But... Mm-hmm. At the same time, you can kind of tell as they progress into questions that were submitted that they tried, I think, to make sure that it was more spread out. Because by the end of it, somebody will get asked a question and then other actors who also have something to input. Like if the question is about, oh, what was your favorite moment on the set? Or what's your favorite spell is one of the questions that came up later. And everybody is kind of adding in their own feedback on that. So things like that are fun. Unfortunately, I mean, it's Secrets of Dumbledore. Jude Law is arguably the most high profile of the actors on the panel, and he's playing the role of Dumbledore. Mm-hmm. So it feels sometimes like a lot of attention gets kind of focused on Jude Law and not so much on the other people who are there. Like, I feel like, I don't know, out of all of these people, they're all very, very good-looking folks. William Nadulum is the one who really does it for me. Like, of all of them, it's a close second with Mads Mikkelsen, but William is the one that I find the most attractive out of all of these people. And it's seeing him sitting there looking so stylish, they all look fantastic. It's always fascinating to see them off set, not in costume, because the way that they dress for interviews is one of the things I like about watching them. But he's sitting there, and he really doesn't get to talk that much. And I can't tell if that's just how he likes it or if people keep forgetting to ask him questions.
Yeah, he has some good line in the press conference. But it reminds me that they did another thing on TikTok yesterday when we were recording. And it was almost the same group with Richard Cole was there and Callum Turner was there too. And Tom Felton hosting that, and it was more relaxed because I think this press conference was it's the global press conference, and the TikTok thing was more, it's in the studio tour, they were with Tom Felton, who was less professional in the way that he was handling the discussion, and it was more they were more jumping from each other, sharing anecdotes and but at the same time, they definitely, William Nadulum didn't talk almost at all. He tried, but he couldn't because they were too many to wanted to share things. But it was a fun interview too. I don't know if it would be available on rewatch, but I guess it will at some point. And it was nice to have this dynamic of memories from the set. It was really, really fun.
Well, with this interview where they had everybody here, I won't go through every single point that was discussed because it was a 48-minute interview, and with our tendency to dissect things, we could be here 3 hours talking about 48 minutes of interview material. But I did pull out a couple of points that I did want to talk about. In the beginning, a lot of the questions that they were directing at the individual actors were concerned with kind of what is going on with the characters where we meet them and how they've changed. And it's when you were talking about Jacob, you mentioned how heartbreaking his opening scene is. Dan does talk about how he and his bakery have fallen on hard times and how it seems like he's just really given up. But he said that that really felt like a reflection of not just in the wizarding world, but in real life, like thinking about whatever year this was, just that basic time period. A lot of people at the time were feeling that way. So his with Jacob, the way he starts off in this movie is kind of a reflection of the times that they were living in. But thankfully, they don't stay there for very long because you get this heartbreaking moment with him where you see how bad things are going. And then all of a sudden, poof, there's Jessica Williams and she's here to have this hilarious exchange with him. And it's like, OK, great. We didn't have to stay here and be sad about it for too long.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I loved Mads Mikkelsen's response to talking about Grindelwald, like how you meet him here, because as the person, first of all, I kept laughing at how the interviewer was phrasing things, because she said things more or less the way I think I would have in her position. She says to Mads Mikkelsen, "Congrats on the new job, by the way." She wanted to know what it was like.
I didn't catch her name, and she was hosting the red carpet too, but she is excellent. She was really, really fun and good.
Well, she's real good. Mm-hmm. But with Mads Mikkelsen, like with Jacob, he's been in this series since the very start. But with Mads Mikkelsen, I mean, we've talked about it a lot. He's stepping into an established character, but this is his first turn at it. So for him as a person, he says it's like going to visit a family and hoping that they'll adopt you. And thankfully, they did that with him right away. He felt very comfortable. He got along great with everybody. The chemistry between them was wonderful. And then he has this challenge of, because they do bring up, as people tend to do with Mads Mikkelsen, he plays a lot of villains, he plays a lot of, he says, misunderstood characters. When they point out how often he plays the villain, he says, I think I play a lot of misunderstood characters. So that's kind of a joke. And he talks about, in getting to know the character of Grindelwald, he wanted to understand why Grindelwald wanted to make the world a better place, because obviously he starts off with this idea that he genuinely thinks is good, but then he starts to go down the path of evil and he's willing to do more dirty deeds than Dumbledore ends up willing to do. So he is fascinated with the journey of where it started off with him being in the right place and how things start to get a little bit more blurry.
Yeah, and he talked about the fact that he had some exchange with Jude Law to understand the dynamic between Dumbledore, the relationship between Dumbledore and Grindelwald. And you can definitely feel like they had this very deep and precise conversation about how, and they are such on the same page, and it shows on screen. Like I said, the chemistry is amazing. And the way that they both talk about it, it's just, You feel like they understand so clearly their characters, but also the relationship between them. That's they are good actors, but they're also good. They are smart humans. So yeah, that's and I don't remember if it was in press conference or in the TikTok thing. He talked about the fact that they started sharing this ideas and the fact that and I think it was Jude Law in the TikTok thing that was talking about the fact that when he was a young man, Jude Law was so Dumbledore was so brilliant that it was quite isolating for him, because he couldn't, as a teenager he was already smarter than everyone and he couldn't relate to everyone because he was the smarter in the room. And when he meets Grindelwald, finally he has somebody as brilliant as he is. So, and Grindelwald maybe thought the same thing, but he also created this ideology together. And Mads Mikkelsen talked at some point of the disappointment between them and on each other. And it's not just the disappointment of Dumbledore in what Grindelwald became, but also the disappointment of Grindelwald that Dumbledore is not with him anymore. So that's just a strong developed relationship that they created together. So really nice.
Very nice. And just to bring it back to Jude Law, he was the first person that they addressed in this interview, and they were asking him about how the character of Dumbledore has changed and how he kind of found his version of it. And it reminded me of when we talked to Joshua Shea about playing a young Newt Scamander, because I think I might have actually assumed, okay, Eddie Redmayne played this character, so he's playing a younger version of it, so he has to study Newt very carefully and bring those mannerisms into it. But he actually was looking at it the other way, because he had to think, who did this person used to be, and mm-hmm. how did those things grow into the person that you see? Because with Jude Law stepping into Dumbledore, it's the same thing, because mm-hmm. you had Richard Harris and Michael Gambon playing these characters. You had these books that he was reading to his kids. So he had been, in a way, preparing for this character for a long time before he ever knew he was going to be playing him. But this version of Dumbledore that we're seeing in these earlier interpretations of him are not the Dumbledore that is iconic, the silver-bearded, you know, pillar of wisdom. He's got a lot of things going on that he has a little bit more freedom to interpret. But what he tried to bring across, because the thing he believed about Dumbledore that he thinks would have stayed from this younger Dumbledore into the version we get when we get to the canon book several years later, is the humor of him. Even when he's dealing with very dark, very serious things, there's this humor with Dumbledore in the books and with the two other gentlemen who played him in the films. And that was the thing with Dumbledore that I think he really wanted to make sure came through. And you do get a lot of moments like that with Dumbledore, because even when he's brooding and kind of sad and maybe a little depressed, he can't help being cheeky and clever.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then with Eddie Redmayne, it was really sweet hearing him talking about working with Jude Law. I feel like all of them, when they talk about what was it like working with Jude Law, and they're like, oh, where do I start? Because he compared it to a master-apprentice relationship between Newt and Dumbledore, because Newt was Dumbledore's student, and then it grows into brotherhood. And to me, mm-hmm. it kind of started to feel, he didn't do it, but I felt like he was going to make a comparison between Anakin Skywalker and Obi-Wan Kenobi, because that's how it started off with them too. It was master and apprentice, and then it grew into brotherhood. And then unfortunately it went in a bad direction that I don't see this relationship going, but still, I mean, you can kind of see how they might be kind of similar. But what Eddie talks about, how what he likes about the relationship between these two characters is that Newt is always going to be Newt in some ways, but what Dumbledore sees in him that he helps bring out is that Newt actually does have good leadership qualities.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's exactly that. And the fact, the way the relationship grows is also more symmetrical, and not the master apprentice, but brotherhood, in the sense that you feel in this movie more what Newt can bring to Dumbledore. Why Dumbledore say in Crimes of Grindelwald that he needs a Newt? You understand more. It's a human thing. It's something very, because Newt is not a big, he's not the man doing big speeches like Dumbledore said, but when he says something deep to Dumbledore, it's really changing. It's really helping Dumbledore in the choices he has to make. So that's a great relationship that they develop in the movie, I think.
True. With a character like Dumbledore, he's almost like a minister, like a in the pulpit preaching kind of minister or a politician, in that the wisdom he imparts is the kind of wisdom that you communicate directly to people face to face, because it's the connection between people that helps reinforce, oh, this guy really knows what he's talking about. Whereas Newt is more like a philosopher. Like, he knows a lot of things and he ponders deep questions, but he would just as soon rather observe and then write down what he thinks and publish it for people to either read or not. Like, he's never gonna throw it in your face, the things that he knows, but he knows quite a lot.
Yeah, and actually Ed is talking about the lesson from that he got from Newt, like worrying means you suffer twice, and he still has this in this movie, this type of quotes. Newt has this type of really quotable quotes, I guess, that are lessons that are helping. And it's just Newt thinking about that without thinking that, oh, that's the big lesson that I need to bring to everyone. It's just like, yeah, that's what works for me. So that's, yeah, I love this character.
That and dance moves. One of the things that made me laugh so hard during this press conference was they talked about the just swivel, the little tushy wiggle, the little crabby in the cage. Yeah, the wiggling moment, about how they figured that move out. I think Eddie even said he was like, he was shooting little videos of himself trying out different things and sending them to David and being like, okay, how about something like this? Because
and
ever
so
since
serious
that
researching how these different animals move to get inspiration to do this stupid little dance.
I mean, it makes sense, because I don't know. I don't think anybody, I don't even know if they really felt it while they were filming it, but when they did the mating dance with the Arumpant in the first movie, that ended up becoming this like iconic moment with him where you realize Eddie Redmayne's got fantastic moves. And now it's almost become, I think he says at some point in the press conference, it's become almost this expectation now that every time you see Newt in a movie, he's got to do some kind of just ridiculous choreography that it looks, if you just walk by him on the street and saw them doing it, you think, what is wrong with him? But it serves a purpose, because he's tracking Zawus and he's trapping Irrumpants that are in heat, or he's trying to get through this parade of little crabs in a cave, because it's always something to do with creatures.
Yeah.
But he just, the choreography of Newt has become an important, unexpected, fun part of the character.
Absolutely, yeah.
Just to kind of skip ahead a little bit, one of the things that I really thought was a fascinating observation from the interview is they I think one of the people, apart from William, that they talked to the least was Tim Lewis. Just because, as you said, he's not usually the one doing these things. But mm-hmm. he made a really great observation. They asked him about some of the places we get to go in the film, and he talks about how we go from the Chinese forests, we go to the German Ministry of Magic, we end up in Bhutan. And what he loves about how much we travel is because if you think about the first movie, where New York is a big city, but you're in the city. In mm-hmm. the second movie, we start off, we're in London, and then we travel to a few different places. But the more we've progressed, the world has gotten wider.
Yeah.
And you don't, it's not just, it doesn't have to just be at one place. Cause with a lot of the movies, you'd start off, say, on Privet Drive, you might go one other place, but then the bulk of the action, you're in Hogwarts Castle. That's the place that people know. But with this, you're going so many places that you really start to appreciate it really is a wizarding world. It really
yeah.
is everywhere.
And it's not just a world of cities. For the first time, you really have Newt in the wild. Like, the Chinese scene is, wow. That's one of the few things that they kept from the promotional stuff. And I'm so glad they did, because it's absolutely amazing. It's a wonderful scene. And I'm really happy that people will, I hope they will not spoil it at the last minute. But yeah, it's really a scene that I'm so happy that we can discover in the big screen for the first time, because it's so gorgeous. So yeah,
I've been really looking for, I mean, way back when all we had were like aerial shots that got leaked of possible locations and speculating what they were. I mean, that's for a while, that's all we had. Now, to kind of, we talked about how there may actually be a little bit too much footage out there for some people's liking. But one of the things that I like is that you see they really went all in on these locations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the Bhutan part is the set design of the Bhutan part is the best of the movie. It's really, really interesting. Every corner of it, it's really, really good.
I'm inclined to believe you. Like, I'm sure that after I've seen it, I will probably agree. But I am really looking forward to seeing that Chinese forest.
Yeah.
And then jumping ahead a little bit further, when they started to get into with the individual people, they were asking them, like, what is your character doing in this movie? With the established characters, they wanted to know how much have they changed. With the newer characters, like with Jessica Williams, they wanted to know, like, how has it been entering this world? Because with Mads Mikkelsen, he's playing an established character, but he's a new actor. With most of these actors, they're playing established characters that they've had since they started doing this. But with Jessica Williams, new character, new actress to this world, and her perspective was really, really sweet. I love hearing her talk about this. Like, she talks about how, like, she couldn't, like, she lost her breath when she was in the Great Hall, because she grew up with these movies and these books like we did. She was a fan, and now she's finally getting her part to actually enter this world. Like, this is as real as it's going to get for somebody getting to go to Hogwarts. And she's going there as a visiting teacher from another school. So her character and her fan perspective are really, really unique and fun and sweet. And I'm starting to really see with the footage we're seeing of her character that that played an important part.
Yeah, and she's saying that the most moving part for her was to seeing the student in the Hogwarts uniform in the on set, and the fact she's telling that it was so exciting and so cute that she wanted to squish them because it was so
she's like, I just wanted to start squishing children, and I was like, wait, what?
Yeah, but you totally can understand what she's feeling, and almost had tears in my eyes listening to her talking about that, because that's so sweet and so relatable as fans.
And Eddie had a similar moment where he talked about how when they arrived on set, they were having butter beers sitting by a roaring fire. And I'm thinking, well, I would pay a lot for that moment. Sure.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And it's like he's been doing this for a bit now, but it's nice to see that even somebody who's becoming very settled in this universe like Eddie can still find exciting and wonderful moments to appreciate.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, as they shifted into questions that were more general and directed at everybody, they would give the questions to specific people, but then everybody else would just kind of start joining in, and it was hilarious. They wanted to know which magical beast you would most like to have. And, of course, Dan Fogler says he wants a Demi, guys. And I'm thinking, oh, he wants his buddy from the first movie. They're walking along holding hands. It's so sweet. He's like, nope, he wants him to give him lottery numbers.
Because he can see the future. But I was so happy that he was mentioning the Demi, guys, because, we didn't see... We're missing Dougal. We didn't see Dougal since the first movie, and... I want to go
back.
But
you know what? That's okay. Because there were so many that just... that scene, it lives rent-free in my heart. The scene where he's first showing Jacob the inside of his case, and we see all the creatures, because even the ones that some people might think aren't very pretty, like those things that just look like giant buffaloes with tentacles on their faces, it just, oh, they're so sweet, and they're a little family. I just want to squish them.
And I can say that we have a new beast in this movie that will definitely, absolutely become a fan favorite. And that's actually it's the one that Victoria Yeats is mentioning. But that's the one that nobody talks about because they don't. We discovered the secret. It's a chilling. Oh, actually, it's pronounced chilling. We say killing, but no, it's chilling.
Yeah.
But we guessed that from our deep analysis from the trailers, and yeah, the chilling is just adorable. Baby chilling.
Oh, I can't
so
wait
cute.
To see. Of course, yeah. Mads Mikkelsen had a similar answer to that question, though, because he said he says, no, you don't want to rely on a demi, guys, because what if they won't tell you the number? It's like, that's why you get a Niffler, because you get a Niffler and you train them. Yeah. I'm like, well, it's like, okay. So
have,
obviously
have,
still
know,
thinking.
You can't train a Niffler. I will manage
nope.
to train a Niffler.
It's like, okay, great. Now we're training Nifflers to steal things for us. God, you are such a villain. Like, if you could somehow marry Le Chief from James Bond and Gellert Grindelwald, like, that's what he'd be doing. You'd see Le Chief sitting in the casino stealing the giant metal blocks that are supposed to, I guess, represent money from people playing poker. Sure. And then Jude Law, of course, has to bring it back to a very Dumbledore-sounding answer, where he points out that the beasts in the films that have been established characters, like the Niffler and Picket, the
Bowtruckle.
Yes, Bowtruckle. Thank you. God, simplest thing. I should remember that. But Jude Law talks about how the established beast characters, like Picket, the Bowtruckle, and Teddy, the Niffler. Is that the name everybody's so dissatisfied with? His name is Teddy.
Yeah.
Let me just give a quick shout out to all of my fellow hosts who aren't here. His name is Teddy. Teddy the Niffler. Get used to it. Get over it. His name is Teddy. Teddy. I want to make sure that let's just accept it and move on. His name's Teddy. But Jude Law talks about how the ones that you've actually had as characters in the films, like the Niffler and the Bowtruckle, since the beginning, they are growing as characters as well as the live-action actors. And I thought, wow, that is such a Dumbledore, Jude Law answer to give, because they're making jokes about trying to steal things and make money, and Jude Law's like, oh, well, the character development of the beast is fascinating as well, isn't it?
Yeah, I know. But he's right. Teddy and Picket has a lot to do, again, in this movie. And they are a great duo. And Eddie is asking a spin-off series with the adventure of Picket and Teddy. And yeah, I support that. I want that too.
And then there were a lot of other moments, as I said, in the interview as well. But just to kind of bring it to a close, one of the last things is Allison talks about how the different ways that love comes across is a really important theme in everything in this movie. The way that friends love each other, the way that people who are in love love each other, the way that love between two people became a source of pain and a source of conflict, but how it's very, very present and endures in all things with these characters. And that felt like a very Dumbledore-ish answer to me, because he always said that love was the greatest and most powerful magic, and it was a magic beyond anything that you would learn in school. So to hear Allison kind of close things out by talking about how important love is to the story, it felt like the right way to close out the press conference.
Absolutely. And I was really, really moved by that, because when I first tried to gather my thoughts, and the first theme, I was, okay, what's the big theme of this different plot? And I found, yeah, it's love. It's the different, it's everything that love can do to you, and good and bad, and every different plot, every different type of relationship, it's all around that. And I was, yeah, really excited that Alison said that in the press conference, and I think Victoria Yeats said something similar in the red carpet, and the two of them are describing very eloquently what I felt to watching the movie. So, and it's what makes, I think, this movie also such connected to the big theme of the Harry Potter books and movies and the first Fantastic Beasts. The second maybe was a bit lost, his theme, even if I love this movie and I still absolutely love it, and I love some scene more. I mean, my favorite scene, until I rewatched The Secret of Dumbledore 10 times to maybe change my mind, but my favorite scene of the whole franchise is still in Crimes of Grindelwald, let's say that. But
which scene in Crimes of Grindelwald?
That's the scene in the auditorium with the mausoleum with the speech of Grindelwald and Queenie leaving Jacob and the walk with me and everything. It's the tension growing and how it revolves. And also the flamel stuff and the magic they do at this part. I love it.
Oh, I agree.
Love it so much. So.
I agree. I seem to remember saying that I know Grindelwald is a bad guy and we're not supposed to side with him. And even though people still don't completely love Johnny Depp's interpretation of the character, the charisma that he came across with when he gave that speech, I seem to remember saying, I think he might have a point, guys. Let's hear him out.
Yeah, same. And it was a really good scene. And the music also in this scene is absolutely my favorite ever. The music in this movie is good too, but for now, nothing tops this scene for me. But but that's very personal, I guess. And again, when I rewatched The Secret of Dumbledore 10 times, maybe I will change my mind.
Oh, sure. I'm sure that there is going to be it'll be like the staircases at Hogwarts, the favorite and least favorite scenes in this movie. They'll change.
Yeah, sure.
I can't wait to talk about that with everybody. But even though everybody wasn't able to be at this press conference, I was very, very, very pleased with the discussion that they were able to have. I feel like the questions in general, some of them were kind of basic, just generic interview questions, very good. There was a lot of the phrase without giving too much away, because people were obviously, the people were trying to ask questions and answer questions without being too spoilery. And at some point it almost becomes like a running gag that isn't really that funny anymore, because it's like, okay guys, we know we're here to talk about this movie and there's some things that we can't say, and just ask and answer your question. We don't have to keep establishing we're trying not to spoil here.
But I hope I also didn't I didn't stay too specific and too generic, but no, so not too specific. Like, I hope the listeners will not think, oh gosh, she spoiled the movie for me.
No, I really don't think so.
But yeah.
You know, it does occur to me, I forgot to tell the listeners why I wrote Dan Stevens all over the doc instead. So just to make sure everybody knows, I hope this makes it into the episode, because I promised I would explain it. The other night, I was having a conversation with a coworker, and I was trying to explain to them what exactly it is that makes Downton Abbey so appealing, because I've seen it a lot, and they've never seen it. And I kept saying Dan Stevens, because he was a big part of the show, and then suddenly he wasn't, and I was very, very angry with him when I found out why. I'll leave that there for now, but the point is, I was saying Dan Stevens a lot, and then I was preparing my notes for this doc, where I was supposed to be writing Dan Fogler, but then I ended up writing Dan Stevens, and you said, Jeff, why did you write Dan Stevens when you meant Dan Fogler? So thank goodness you were there to catch that for me. Otherwise, I might have accidentally said the name Dan Stevens in connection with this project.
That's the big secret.
Yeah, that's he the is... secrets of Jeff.
Yeah.
He mixes no, but I up was, character
the secrets
names.
Of Dumbledore is that it's that Jacob is now played by Dan Stevens and not Dan Fogler.
Oh, God, no. I forbid it. For one thing, I'm still mad at Dan Stevens. And for another, I would rather have Dan Fogler any day.
Oh, yeah, no, same.
I make no apologies about that. Anyway, so for our podcast question, since so much of the discussion today was character specific, we want to know, which character in Secrets of Dumbledore do you think will be the most exciting based on what we know so far about this movie? and we would love to hear from all of you, so feel free to drop us an owl on any of our social media outlets, or if you have a more long-form answer, feel free to email us your thoughts at speakbeastie@gmail.com. And if you'd like to do something to help us out, we would love it if you would leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts.
And this is the most exciting moment to follow us. So please, you can find us on Twitter, Instagram, and Instagram at SpeakBeastie. On Facebook at facebook.com/SpeakBeastie. On Tumblr at SpeakBeastiePodcast.tumblr.com. And you can support the show on Patreon, on patreon.com/SpeakBeastie. And like I said, you will have there awesome content and spoiler content for the... So you will have something as soon as you see the movie. You can go right to our Patreon content and have our spoiler review of the, our spoiler reaction of the movie. But you will also have cool stickers and other awesome Patreon content every month. So yeah, lots of cool things planned for this exciting time that we were waiting for so many years.
So many years, but it's finally happening.
Yeah.
Well, I think that will do it for this episode. Thank you for bearing with us for our slightly delayed release so we can get everything together. But hopefully you have enjoyed this conversation. I'm Jeff.
And I'm Marjolaine. Case closed.